is Chinelli versus Commonwealth, Mr. Broccoletti, Ms. Kiernan.
Sir, may it please the court.
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, if I could, Your Honor.
All right. I'm glad to hear from you.
This case presents the novel and unique question.
I think novel's an understatement.
Novelty.
That's probably even a better phrase to use with respect to the conflict that we believe exists between the 18.2265.3 paraphernalia statute and the medical marijuana statute that's present in Virginia as well. And I think if I could address the court to go back to the basics, if we will. And when you look at the statute itself that the defendant was charged and convicted of, 18.2265.3, it provides that any person who sells or possesses with intent to sell drug paraphernalia to be used to ingest marijuana.
Broccoletti, if we agree with the trial court that the appropriate way to view this statute is as applied, do you lose?
No. I win on both. Number one, I disagree with that interpretation.
I understand that.
But I think that we win as applied as well. And I think we win as applied as well because of the defendant's two things. Because, number one, the defendant's statements to the police in terms of medical marijuana and that he sells to people who have marijuana issues.
Whether it's as applied or overall vagueness, the premise that you're starting from is that there's a conflict between these two statutes.
Correct.
And looking at the 18.251.1, which is the so-called medical marijuana statute.
Yes.
I think there's, as I read that statute, tell me why I'm reading this incorrectly. As I read that statute, and I was, by the way, startled to learn that that's actually been on the books since 1938. So
makes two of us.
But it doesn't actually legalize possession of marijuana. What it does is provide legislative immunity. Basically, it says you shall. Doesn't say it's legal to possess it if you're a pharmacist or a medical doctor or have a prescription. What it says is you cannot be prosecuted. And it's an interesting choice of terms that the General Assembly has chosen there, because in terms of the constitutional analysis, if we're alleging a conflict between statutes, if you accept the premise that what the General Assembly has done there is to not legalize it, but simply make it impossible for a Commonwealth attorney to prosecute someone who fits one of these categories, it seems to me that kind of changes the way we view these two statutes in terms of applying the various jurisprudence that applies to either as applied or general vagueness. Would you agree?
I would agree if your concept of shall not be prosecuted is equivalent to the immunity statute. I would view that language or those words as not criminalizing the possession of
it. It doesn't legalize. It simply prevents the prosecution. Whether you call it immunity, I guess you could certainly call it, it certainly equates to the same thing, legislative immunity. But it doesn't say it's legal to dispense it or possess it if you have a prescription. It just says you can't be prosecuted for it.
That's correct. I think that's the language, but I would view that language that you shall not be prosecuted under that as creating a decriminalization of the possession of it pursuant to the terms of that particular statute.
Where I'm going with this is the next step then is someone has a prescription for marijuana. That doesn't necessarily imply that a place that sells paraphernalia is operating legally. They're not part of the exemption or the immunity, if you will, in the statute. And if that's a hole that needs to be addressed, it's the one that needs to be addressed by the General Assembly, it seems to me.
It is, and that was part of our argument.
But that doesn't make one statute vague versus another. In other words, analytically, it seems to me, you can possess what amounts to immunity from prosecution for one crime that doesn't extend to another related crime.
But how is one able to understand the criminal conduct that they're engaged in if they also recognize that it's perfectly.
Well, if your client's a pharmacist, if your client's a medical doctor, or if your client has a prescription, you've got no problem. If they don't, it's not hard to understand that they might have a problem, it seems to me.
Well, I would disagree, because how is an average citizen supposed to understand what conduct that theirs is criminal when they also understand that there exists a statute?
Let me suggest this to you, that the drug paraphernalia statute only criminalizes the sale of drug paraphernalia that is used illegally to ingest marijuana in this case, correct?
Well, the statute says for use to illegally plant, and the question then would be, do you read that illegally to cover all those other things?
I think when you have a series of commas like that followed by an or at the conclusion, I think we would conclude that modifier illegally applies to all of those. But take that if I assume that to be the case, federal law does not apply to, there's no federal exemption for medical use of marijuana.
Correct.
So it is illegal to possess marijuana for any reason under federal law.
That's an interesting question that in terms of different states, whether you be in Washington, Colorado,
in Virginia, it is illegal under federal law to possess marijuana for any reason.
I would, with respect to I think that the 18.2251 statute takes it out of that analysis.
I'm not sure we've abolished federalism.
No, I'm not suggesting that we've done that. I'm just saying that that's an interesting question. Because of in today's context, with the legalization of it in several different states,
Justice Department has agreed basically to turn a blind eye to federal statute in those states that have chosen to legalize or decriminalize marijuana, but the law is still on the books.
That's correct. So I'm sorry. So your question, I apologize.
So my question is, there is no medical marijuana. And let me rephrase it. Any person who purchased these materials to use to ingest marijuana would be doing so illegally.
Well, under certain circumstances, yes, but under other circumstances, no. Let's assume for the purpose that this defendant was selling this particular paraphernalia, and in the context of your question, the paraphernalia was going to be used in Colorado, where it's perfectly legal and the Justice Department has turned a blind eye. Would he therefore be guilty of this particular offense under those circumstances?
Well, let me rephrase the question. Suppose someone came in and said, I have a prescription for medical marijuana issued by a doctor right here in Virginia Beach. Will you sell me a bong to ingest it? Wouldn't the sale of that bong be illegal because federal law prohibits the use of marijuana in Virginia?
I think that you presume too much of the average citizen under the statute and knowing what the citizen should know his conduct should be. If he comes in with a valid prescription, and under Virginia law that prescription would allow that person to possess marijuana, I think that's a very difficult question to say that the citizen would then contemplate federal law. I mean, we're talking, just to give you an example, the United States Supreme Court just granted cert Friday on an analog case, which is kind of similar to the discussion we're having here. It's called McFadden. It came out, actually, of Judge Morgan in Norfolk and went to the Fourth Circuit. And the issue before the Supreme Court has granted cert is there's a conflict in the circuits about whether or not a person has to know that the substance is an analog under federal law when under state law it's not a controlled substance. I think that that's a very similar question to what the court has answered.
Let me ask you a question. Let's set aside federal law so we don't compromise any more than we already have, and just talk about exclusively about state law. Looking only at the paraphernalia statute, I gather the thrust of your argument is, and I think you answered this question already and agreed with me, the thrust of the argument is that the vagueness arises out of the apparent conflict between the two statutes.
Correct.
So setting aside the medical marijuana statute and looking merely at the face of the paraphernalia statute, we don't have a vagueness issue vis-a-vis internally, I guess,
no,
within the paraphernalia statute.
No.
So if that's the case, then it seems to me At least as far, well, either way, either as applied or generally speaking, in order to get to a vagueness conclusion, a constitutionally vagueness conclusion, one would have to conclude that the medical marijuana statute has applies in some way, shape, or form to those who would sell paraphernalia that meets the definition under the paraphernalia statute.
Well, as I argued to the trial court, how else are you going to use it? Well, unless you have paraphernalia from which to ingest
and that's,
it.
As I say, that may be a hole the General Assembly should address, or maybe you bake a lot of brownies or something, but the point
is that
just because you have a right to purchase it and be immune from prosecution if you do so, that doesn't automatically necessarily convey a right to buy whatever you want to in order to do that.
And I would say that statement that Your Honor has just made, it crystallizes my argument perfectly about why there's such a conflict and why this court can't address it, but the General Assembly has to.
Mr. Broccoli, I don't want to step on, I am going to step on you about time a little bit, because and I want to go back to the as applied.
I'm going to give you more time, don't worry.
The as applied versus facial challenge. Last week, I believe it was, the Supreme Court, our Supreme Court, Virginia Supreme Court, heard argument on three or four cases involving a constitutional challenge to Virginia's sodomy laws, consensual sodomy laws. And in the cases, at least one of the cases, the victim, for want of a better term, was a juvenile. So the argument became, do we use an as applied or facial challenge evaluation when determining whether our sodomy laws are unconstitutional where a juvenile is involved. Would you agree that their decision in that case would pretty much answer the question here, whether we do as applied or facial?
I think it would certainly give us great guidance. I can't speak to that because I don't know the essentials of that particular case, so I don't want to bind myself to something that I'm not familiar with, but I'm sure that their principles that they're going to lay out are going to give us a significant...
The Fourth Circuit, and was it McDonald v. Moose, did a facial
correct
evaluation, and our Moose versus... McDonald versus Commonwealth... No, Moose versus Commonwealth... our Supreme Court said just the opposite.
Correct. So I'm sure they're going to give us guidance, but I can't speak specific to the facts.
If we wait for that opinion, this one might take a while.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
All right. Ms. Kiernan?
Good morning, Your Honors. Elizabeth Kiernan on behalf of the Commonwealth. To answer the court's question in the McDonald versus Moose matter, although the decision in that case might shed some light on this case, I think we already have controlling Virginia Supreme Court precedent that where the appellant is raising a vagueness challenge and can't show
the law.
Do you
really expect the Supreme Court to be consistent in their jurisprudence?
Well, at this time, Your Honor, they have been consistent to this point. and at those arguments, I think the comments from the bench could tell where the trees were going on that.
I listened to the oral argument. I've got a feeling I know how that one's coming out.
And if they are consistent, I mean, through, I think we have Woodfin versus Commonwealth is 1998, Singleton, that's from this court, Motley, and also in 2010, the Volkswagen case. All of these cases hold consistently that an appellant cannot challenge a law on its face when the application of that law is not, or is rather, constitutional as applied to the particular facts and circumstances of his case.
Unless it's a First Amendment.
Correct, Your Honor. Unless it's a First Amendment challenge, which this case does not raise First Amendment issues. Furthermore.
Well, but in this case, though, admittedly it's pretty thin, but there is some evidence in the record that the appellant sold marijuana to those with prescriptions, or not marijuana, but paraphernalia to those with prescriptions for marijuana. And if that's the case, well, doesn't that give him standing? As I say, it's pretty thin evidence, but it is in the record and arguably would provide them with standing to test that.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the trial court made a factual finding in this matter that the appellant was not in the business of selling his merchandise to people with prescriptions for medical marijuana.
Well, I'm not sure that answers the question, though, because just because you're not in the business of doing it doesn't necessarily mean that the statute is as vague as applied to you, or even generally, if you're going to be impacted by it.
I think, Your Honor, I disagree, because if he's not trying to sell these products to people who have such lawful prescriptions, then those two code sections don't interplay with respect to him. He then is only really looking at that first code section that criminalizes the.
Was there any evidence in the record that there's ever been a prescription for medical marijuana written in Virginia?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, the defendant's statement, I believe, was that he sells to people with legitimate medical problems. The reference to a prescription came when the Commonwealth was cross-examining him.
Well, certainly no evidence in the record that the defendant in this case is a medical doctor that can diagnose medical problems, so. But can I follow up on a question I asked Mr. Broccoletti and get the Commonwealth's take on it? What's the Commonwealth's view about the structure of the medical marijuana statute? Is it a legalization statute? Or is it some other? Does it do something else? Does it immunize? Does it?
I believe I would read it the same way Your Honor does, as a immunization from prosecution. But I have not done research on that question. I don't think it necessarily would impact the outcome in this case, because those two code sections are ultimately consistent. There is nothing in that code section, whether it decriminalizes or provides immunity from prosecution, that would lead someone to believe that they could sell this type of merchandise. As you mentioned, you're not a doctor, you're not a pharmacist, you're not a prescription holder. Why are we in this code section? The code section does not provide any mechanism by which this material can be sold. And whether that's a wise decision or not, as the court has mentioned, is a legislative one.
I've got two questions. It's basically a two-part question. So let me ask both parts, and then you can answer. The first question is there anything in the record regarding medical marijuana when you receive a prescription, whether that prescription includes a device in which to use the marijuana that you get medically? And the second part of that question is, if there's nothing in the record about that, which I don't think there is, whose burden is that if it's a constitutional challenge to the constitutionality of the statute?
I agree, Your Honor. I don't believe there's anything in the record that speaks to how prescription marijuana would be ingested. There was speculation before the trial court, as there was here, that it could be orally ingested with the aid of brownies or something similar. However, the burden is on the person who is attacking a statute to come forward with evidence of its unconstitutionality. So to the extent that this court would require that type of evidence, the burden was on the defendant to bring that evidence into play.
The other thing about this medical marijuana, the statute, I'll use the word decriminalizes for want of a better term, the possession of marijuana, but it doesn't decriminalize the manufacture or the distribution of marijuana. Hence the reason there's been no prescriptions written in Virginia.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And there is no evidence of any other prescription in this record. Again, it would have been the defendant's burden to come forward with a prescription or with some further evidence that this is what he was in the business of doing. The trial court had the opportunity to judge the credibility of the defendant as he took the stand in this matter.
How does the Commonwealth respond to Mr. Broccoletti's argument, essentially, that that because the General Assembly chose to, again, for lack of a better word, decriminalize the possession of marijuana under some circumstances without providing a specific mechanism for its consumption, that equates, just by virtue of that dichotomy, to constitutional vagueness?
I would disagree, Your Honor, and I think that argument reads too much into these code sections. Whether or not the General Assembly had a specific intent in mind for how one is to go to make that leap from criminalizing to decriminalizing or to ingesting their particular substances. The code section isn't clear on that, and that doesn't mean that we get to then kind of jump that it's legal when we have something else that says explicitly in all circumstances you cannot sell paraphernalia under these circumstances. We don't have a code that says it's decriminalized under those set of facts, and I think that split is something that might be a legislative something that the legislature might want to take up. The Virginia Supreme Court held in Ray Phillips that the wisdom of a particular code section or its enactment is an issue for the General Assembly and not for this court. There is no conflict on the face of those code sections between whether you could sell or could not sell. And a person who was in the business of selling them can't look at the text of those code sections and say, like, wow, it looks like I'm in the clear. There is no language there that would permit them to think it was appropriate to sell this type of paraphernalia.
Well, counsel, let me ask you this. So in terms of the medical marijuana statute, in a hypothetical with a pharmacist who has a, let's just say it's a ma-pa pharmacy, and they are faced with having to, a doctor has written a prescription and they have to fill that prescription, would the theory be that they're growing pot in the backyard of the pharmacy and they go out and process that marijuana? How would they get the marijuana legally to ensure that they can fill the prescription?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Not addressed in the code section, is it?
No.
Okay.
Well, again, that kind of leads into the question I was going to ask, which is, I think in the abstract we could probably agree that just because there's an area of public policy that has not been filled in by the General Assembly, that doesn't necessarily equate to unconstitutional vagueness. But having said that, clearly if you have two statutes that are diametrically opposed to each other, say opposite things, you get into issues of statutory construction and all that, but you certainly can reach a point where the tension between the two does rise to the level of not putting anybody on notice as to what you can or cannot do. If we conclude that this is purely an immunity statute or a decriminalization statute within a specific set of parameters, the issue Judge Decker just raised about, well, how do we execute the statute? Where does the pharmacist get the prescription, get the marijuana to dispense when somebody shows up with a prescription? And so forth, how do they consume it? Is that something we should even care about? And it's sort of a, well, that's tough. Maybe in this day and age, you just get on a plane and go to Colorado where it's a lot easier. So,
I certainly don't think it's implicated on the facts of this case. And I think we might be in a different procedural posture if the defendant were a pharmacist who had dispensed something similar or marijuana or something like that. But the actions of this defendant they don't have those same problems of, look, I'm allowed to dispense this, but I'm not personally allowed to do anything else with it. Whether pharmacists are given more leeway under this code section doesn't mean that other people are given more leeway under the other code sections. They simply don't cross over. Because the pharmacists are allowed to distribute it does not mean that someone else might be allowed to sell it. They're different things.
Ms. Karen, I think I recall this correctly. This was a conditional guilty plea, was it not?
Correct, Your Honor, but I believe that the parties fully litigated the issue of constitutionality before that.
We seem to have melded into the argument a touch of sufficiency, and I just wanted to make sure that we're not dealing at all with sufficiency. We're dealing solely with the constitutionality of an enacted statute on the books.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think the the factual findings do come in here a little bit, because as we talk about the constitutionality of the code section as applied to the particular defendant in this case, the trial court's factual findings are still entitled to deference in that respect here. And the trial court in this case,
adopted the proceedings in the district court, did they not?
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor. And based on that record, which is also included in our appendix here, found the defendant didn't have standing to mount a facial attack because the code section was not unconstitutional as applied to him. Gave him a reasonable opportunity to understand what it was the code section prohibited.
Is the Commonwealth's position the only way it would apply to him would be if the facts in this case were that instead of an undercover police officer, we had somebody with a prescription and a bong was sold to an individual with a prescription and then arrested for it?
I think that would be a closer argument. I how it would allow us to reach the issue of the interplay between those two code sections. However, as we've argued on briefing here today, the interplay of those code sections doesn't result in vagueness.
That situation wouldn't deal with the constitutionality of either statute. It would deal with the sufficiency of the evidence, whether the device was sold for the illegal consumption of marijuana.
I think that would be correct, Your Honor, and it would be the defendant's burden to raise perhaps as an affirmative defense, the reasons for under which he was selling these devices. Does trial court have any? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Trial court may, but we don't.
Sometimes we think
people have been trying to make us a trial court all day
long.
That's
right.
There's no reason you should stop.
You missed the writ.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Broccoletti.
Briefly, the word sufficiency has never crossed my lips.
Okay, so not on this one, right?
Not on this one, no.
You know better.
No, so that's not the issue. Secondly, counsel continues to refer to the findings of fact that the trial court made. That's on page 16 through 20 of the joint appendix. And I would certainly, I'm sure the court has read them, and I'd certainly recommend the court read them again. There are no findings of fact that the defendant was not a credible witness. There was no findings of fact that the defendant was engaged in the business of selling these particular items in the way the counsel has referred to.
I'll give you a lot of credit, Mr. Broccoletti. You have set this up as a very pure constitutional issue, and whether we can whether we reach it or not, and for the degree to which we reach it, it's another story. But I don't think we're confused about what we're dealing with here.
Correct. And as Judge Decker questioned earlier, the code section 251 doesn't have any mention of the devices that are be used to ingest the marijuana or the substance itself, which again I think is indicative of and illustrates the problem that we've presented to the court in terms of the conflict.
And that goes to the analysis of looking at the two in together.
Correct, exactly, okay. Which I think is a General Assembly issue. And I'll rest at that.
Can't wait to hear your response you get from the legislators when you take that one.
Yeah, the courts committee might not.
All right, we're going to come down and recounsel.